I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Good Glow Podcast. Following a cancer diagnosis in my 30s, my goal is to inspire and empower people on their self-care journey. Through the conversations I have with my guests, we hope to do just that.
There is a plan, and believe that if you're at rock bottom and you're suffering, this is all part of your life, your tapestry. This is your story, and where you go next is what's crucial.
The love before was easy, but the love at my lowest was real.
We all know what makes us happy. We all know the life we dreamed about. And deep down, we all know what we're capable of if you only give yourself permission to do it.
I now live a healthy and fulfilled life where self-care is a top priority and every day is an opportunity to grow. This season, I'm so proud to say I've teamed up with Vichy. Vichy is an expert French pharmacy dermocosmetic brand. Doctor-founded Vichy has established the link between health and beauty and led the way in skincare innovation for 90 years. Powered by active ingredients, all product formulations are clinically proven, hypoallergenic and dermatologically tested for sensitive skin, making Vichy a pioneer in skin health science. Taking a holistic approach to skin health, Vichy is committed to provide safe and effective skincare routines for every skin type at every life stage. All Vichy products are available in local pharmacies nationwide. Welcome to a very special episode of the Good Glow Podcast. I am so excited for you to hear this. I'm really looking forward to the feedback on this episode with Rory Stories. We recorded this last week. I felt a shift in how I felt after we recorded this. So I felt really optimistic. I felt like I believed in myself. I honestly felt like I could take on the world. So I hope it has the same effect on you. Rory speaks a lot about, you know, self-belief and how he battles with self-doubt. And, you know, he's been an amazing advocate for mental health and he wears his heart on his sleeve. Yes, he's so funny throughout this podcast at the same time. When we were recording it, I just felt like we were onto something really special. I felt like it was a really powerful conversation. I won't say too much more about it, but if you didn't watch Hell Week, which is the TV show that Rory has been on over the last couple of months on RTE, don't worry about that. We only speak about Hell Week for about 7 minutes at the start and just to fill you in on what it was about. So Rory was in this celebrity lineup. They go to Cork and they're treated like army recruits. So, you know, they're immersed in like freezing cold water. They're jumping out of helicopters, like climbing mountains, going into burning buildings. Like they were really pushed to physical and mental capacity. And it was terrifying to watch it. Very entertaining at times too. But yeah, so Rory just speaks about what he's learned from that show and how he applied it to his life. And something which I found so brave of him to admit is that during the final week of Hell Week when it was airing, and you know, he was, I don't think people will mind, the other recruits will mind me saying that he was the absolute star of this show, that he found himself going back to the doctor and asking for help. And he wears his heart on his sleeve, as I said. He's so authentic, and I hope you enjoy it. And actually, sorry, just before we get into it, I just wanted to quickly mention that Rory has announced a show called Resilience, Conquering Your Inner Demons with Ray Goggins, who was a special forces operator on Hell Week. They've got a date in Vicar Street, Limerick and Galway. So for more on that, head over to aneveningwith.ie. That's aneveningwith.ie. Rory, thank you so much for coming on to the Good Glow Podcast today.
Yeah, pleasure.
Okay, so I was glued to Hell Week. I don't think I've ever watched something consistently on TV for a long time, but I couldn't wait for Wednesdays to watch Hell Week. There was just something about it that was just so raw, so intriguing. And when I was watching you, Rory, I've met you before, but I think I was just so blown away by how you were wearing your heart on your sleeve. And I think when we talk about episode two, I think that was your episode. So for anyone who hasn't watched Hell Week, like, how would you describe that experience?
Hell week is probably how we describe it. It's listen, I'm sure like anyone who has spoke to anyone like that, they may know from the show, from their real experience, like it's an undescribable experience. It's, you really are in a different world. Like, you know, what would be, when we first kind of got onto the bus to head to the Hell Week, and when they took the phones off us and they gave us our number, it was like, it was getting real then. And one of the girls, Jen, who was part of production, was like, right, from now on, you know, I won't be able to look at you. You know, you can't make any contact with anyone. It's just use that together. You can't look at them. And from then it was like, oh my God. And yeah, from literally the minute we met, there was a DS there on a beach in Cork, standing there with a balaclava on, and we had all life jackets, and he's like, take your, and straight away he was just like, not nice basically, like, and he was like, take your life jacket, and we all put them on, and we started walking out towards this boat in our runners and tracks bottoms and jeans, whatever, and water up to our waist, freezing water. But it was so eerie, like it was like maybe 6 o'clock in the morning or 5:30 in the morning, like, and all of us were just in a line, and you're just yourself in your head. And then we jumped on the boat, and then, as I said, like, we were on this boat for ages and freezing, like, and the Hell Week hadn't even started really. We're like, ugh. Next, we just hear this helicopter coming, blah, 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 and you just see, like, look, and there's Ray Goggins sitting at the edge of it, just staring at us all. And yeah, this went on for so long. Like we obviously copped. He wanted to get really cool opening scene, because, as you know, it's such a class opening scene, that helicopter coming. So, like, it wasn't really much Hell Week, it was more for the production to get a class. And eventually then we landed to this, and from the minute the DS is like, just get out of the boat, jumped out of the boat, and Alsatian dogs barking. And from literally that moment till the moment, like, your armband's off, it was just relentless, like, yeah.
And did you expect, like, there were scenes in Hell Week where people were, like, getting sick on the beach, and you're being made put the sick back into your pocket, like, pick up your sick and put it into your pocket? And I was laughing watching it, because I think if I was there, you know, you imagine yourself being there, and I was like, I think I'd be nervously laughing, but when you're in it, I presume it's a different experience.
Yeah, like, again, we can't describe to the environment. Like, these four DSs, they are like superhuman. It feels like they're superhuman. They're in this black, and they're so intimidating. Like, they carry this massive presence the minute you walk into the room. And like that waltz, we were wall squatting. Like, I practiced wall squatting for like max 2 minutes in my gym before, and then we were there for about 3. I mean, all our toys were rattling, and take off your clothes. And I just remember sitting and looking there at Stephanie Rose beside me in her knickers and brand shaking. I was like, this is real. Like, this is actually so real. And like, you forget the cameras are there straight away. And then we ran up, and that kind of the Cossack squatting, I think it is, like, burning your legs, and then we get to this. And I always remember the first time the DS, Jerry, really just rang that eerie bell and says, you don't want to be hearing this too often. They'll get up them stairs. And I mean, Georgie, these steps, they kept going, the famous bell run, and everyone's legs were hanging off them. And then we get into the room, we're just standing there freezing, and in comes Ray Goggins and just laid down the law straight away, that basically, like, yous are all, you know, you're used to being, like, people saying yous are great and claps in the back and all, we're not going to give that to you, and none of yous are going to be here in a few hours and all this. And it was just, oh my God, so scary. But yeah, just hard to describe. Like, do you know what I mean? I my wife nearly, like, was going to divorce me, I'd say, with the amount of time I spoke about it after coming home. Well, no, you don't understand this. We've done this and we've done that. And no, you'll never get what we went through. And just, but we have a WhatsApp group where we literally, we all meshed in, and we were all like, oh yeah, our partners just don't get it. And only we know what we went through. And yeah, real strong bond with all the recruits. Like, yeah, we really are. Like, I knew a lot of them, like, their names now, but Darren O'Sullivan was the only one I really spoke to pre-show, and the rest of me only met for the first time. And like, within literally 24 hours, these were best friends. Like, you had that relationship, like, you would have with your close friends. You felt like you could tell them everything, because it was no choice. You had to become a team or else go home, like, you know. And yeah, just great experience. Like,
tell us how you felt episode 2. Like I said in the introduction, I like think that was your episode. I might just play a clip from it.
Just on my own mental health. I do suffer with, like, I just can't compose myself. I just hit a very dark place a few years ago, like 2013, and I thought I had nothing to live for, because I thought I was useless. But I just needed help, and I got it. And I turned my life around.
when you were speaking in that second episode and you started getting very emotional and saying, you know, you felt at times like you were useless, and at that moment you just put your heart on your sleeve, and I think you just had such an effect on people watching. Like, I was watching Twitter, I was watching your social media. How did you feel watching that moment?
Yeah, so I suppose to put a bit of perspective in it so people know how the show goes. So we're all brought for an interrogation, obviously. So you're told to leave the room, you put this black bag over you, and it's not a pleasant experience, like, the whole way to the room. Like, there's a little bit of kick, a little bit of pinching going on, like, to kind of make you uncomfortable. But you don't know whether you're going to sit in front of Ray Goggins or Jay Reedy or staff, or you don't know whether production. So about halfway through day two, like, to show how hard day two, I was already starting to feel a bit the emotions, like, in me. And when I was going to the toilet by myself, like the soul was starting, as Ray Goggins says, the soul, I was starting to get in deep into me, and I knew that. So they sat me down and pulled off my thing, and there was a girl there, and she was like, "Well, Rory, how are you getting on?" And I was like, "Oh my God, so good to see you." And so for that few, maybe 10 or 15 minutes, you're in an interview, and she starts to say about, "So tell us about your experience so far." And I was talking to her about, you know, it's been very tough, and, you know, I struggled a bit with confidence. And then I remember the moment where I was like, "Oh, this is horrible." Like, I could feel it coming. And she's like, "Oh, don't worry about it." And I could feel the tears, and I just could not stop them. And then, like, it was probably worse than it showed on telly. Like, thankfully they didn't, but it was raw. Like, and I don't know, like, it took me literally, I'd say, 5 minutes to mention mental health, literally say it. Like, you know, even though I do talk about mental health, like, it's big about what Rory Stories is about. But for me, like, to talk about my own is so difficult. I was like, you know, just mental health. And it came out. And once it came out, then, like, she kind of kept me going. And I spoke about, like, I feel never good enough. And it came back from my school days being, you know, bad in school. And when you're growing up in the 90s in Ireland, like, you know, it's very raw. Like, if you're not good, you're just kicked out of class. And I was one of them, like, unfortunate young people that were kicked out of class. And self-doubt was embedded in my head from a very young age. Like, and it's something I still deal with, like, at the minute. Like, I constantly doubt myself, even though, like, if I take a step back and look in on what I've achieved in the last kind of 7 or 8 years, it's pretty impressive. But I never allow myself to do that. And Hell Week really showed me that. And it was only when I was watching myself back on the TV, I was like, God, like, I really do struggle with self-confidence. And I didn't realize I did until Hell Week, like, as much as I did. And when you experience failure in a normal world, there's someone to put their arm around you saying, listen, it's okay. Whether it be you lose a match or you fail an exam, there's generally someone there to say it's okay. But on Hell Week, there's no arm around the shoulder. It's just face that wall and let the demons run riot in your head. And I remember facing the wall, and I was the only person that failed getting up that ship out of the mall. And I remember driving, going back on the boat, like, and I felt so low. But the good thing about resilience is I know I'd been in that place before, like, whether it be in school or whether it be, you know, a bad gig or people trolling me online, whatever it may be, I know how that feels. And I kept saying, Rory, don't quit now. Like, you know, I obviously wanted to hand over my arm and say, no, I want to go home. I just feel crap. But no, I said, no, just hang in there. And then, you know, you just kind of forget about it. And then the very next morning, we went to do that scratch, the beach episode. And, like, we had 45 minutes sleep. It was so hectic. And we jumped out of bed and we had to pack a bag. And I have bad asthma and I have really bad heartburn. Like, so I have to take a heartburn tablet every morning and I have to take my inhalers to keep my asthma. But because it was so frantic, I forgot to take my heartburn tablet and I forgot my inhaler. So I got this disgusting porridge that they give us for breakfast. And it's like two mouthfuls and that's all. And it's just rotten. And they wolfed it into me. And we were on this freezing cold bus, like, they made so they got us out of bed at like 5 in the morning and threw us on this bus to God knows where. It's all blacked out and they put on the aircon full blast. None of us could sleep. I was sitting beside Laura Nolan, like, and I was so cold and I was like, I felt like saying, Laura, like, listen, I'm happily married and I'm sure you love your fella, but can we just hug each other here? I'm like, no, like, no, like, kind of sexual tension around. I'm just freezing. So here was me and Laura just rattling beside each other. None of us could sleep. And I was like, well, someone turn off that aircon. It's only later on a cop that's all part of the game. And And then we got to scratching, and I realized then I'd forgotten my inhalers and I'd forgotten my heartburn tablets, and the demons were having such a feel. They going, oh, Rory, will you just give up? And then your man, staff poured the water down the back of me, and I was just going, oh, I felt so low. But like, it's funny like that, the human mind, how we can always bounce back. Is about an hour into scratch, like I said to myself, either get on with it or just quit. And I said, no, here's the chance, Rory. If you quit now, you're never, ever, ever going to forgive yourself, because you know you have more in the tank. It was more psychological than physical. I knew physically I was still in. I'm fit and strong, but my head was gone. But something just switched in my head, and I said, you know what? I'm going for this. And I just turned into this machine. And I suppose some of the people on the show like would probably tell you, Rory went into this zone on scratch, like where he just became, I wasn't the orderly dog, but I began it myself. I told everyone to shut up basically and just let's do this together as a team, and dragged a few people with me, and I felt amazing after scratch. Like, it's like I said on episode 2, like when I was getting drowned in for a lovely shower, I remember saying, like, you know, I'm back in the game here, like I'd hit rock bottom basically, yeah, on the show, and I'd bounce back. Like, and I just wanted people watching the show, like, to say that, like, we all experience that self-doubt, and where we want to quit on a project or we want to quit on a task, but just hang in there and trust yourself that you have the strength to get over it. And that's what happened to me in that episode. I kind of, like, felt so low, but I said, no, I'm not letting this beat me. And I suppose this beast mode, if you want to call it, came out of me on that beach, and I kind of enjoyed scratch because it was me against me going, I am not letting you beat me. You bet me up on the side of that ship, you bet me up all morning on the cold bus, and I kind of went around with a bit of a smile on my face, and yes, I put my puke in my pocket, yes. Yeah, I remember at one stage the DS being like, 13, I want you to run down to that water, and I want you to fill your buckle up, your helmet water, and if you drop an inch of that, you're drinking every bit of it. And I was like, oh my god, like a litre of salt water, holy Christ. And I remember running, and I looked at Ray Goggins, and he looked at me, and he looked down, looked at me again, and if he had said drink it, I would have drank it. I wasn't giving up, and I would have drank like a litre of salt water. And he goes, just pour it over your head. I was like, oh, thank you very much, DS. And I poured it over my head, and yeah, like, it just, yeah, it was that. So that for me was like, if I had a left after scratch, I would have left happy. I genuinely would have, like, I got into a very low point, and I'd ask myself questions, and I'd bounce back. So for me, I was on bonus territory after that, if you get me. Like, I was like, right, I've proven that I can take the punches and move forward. So that's what I get out of it. Like,
oh, so good. And you're so right. It's that rock bottom moment and the growth that comes out of that, you know, whatever you do next. And you said in one of your Instagram posts, what you know from life experience is that the hardest thing we can be in this life is ourselves. And whoa, when I read that, it kind of took my breath away, because it's so true. And, you know, what is your experience of that? Because you were so yourself on this show.
No, listen, I'd like to think I always am myself, and I'd like to think anyone, like, people look at kind of Rory stories and they have their opinion on what you do online and whether they find you funny or not. And that's fine. That's the world we live in. But I'd like to think anyone who's ever met me in person would have the same opinion, that he's just what you see is what you get. Like, there's no acting. I'm just, I've always been this person. And, like, you know, success or all these stories or anything else, it's like, why would I change, like, at the end of the day? And it's funny, like, I met Niall Horan recently at an event, and I was chatting to Niall, lovely guy, and I said, Niall, can I ask a question? Like, how do you deal with the level of fame you have? Because I'm kind of starting to experience, obviously, at a lower level. And he said it so well. He said, Rory, everything else changes around me, I just don't change. Like, and it was such simple analogy. And he's like, you're right, why should I change? And I've been lucky enough to meet like Robbie Keane and Paul O'Connell and Shane Lowry and all these lads over the years, and they're all 100%. Like, you just have it, you think because they have such good profiles that they're not going to be down to earth, but they actually all really are. Like, and so going into Hell Week, like, I didn't have a plan to be, oh, that's who I am. What you see is what you get. And even it came down to like my arse hanging out, my belly hanging out, and the clothes too small for me, and giving out about being hungry. But like, there's no time to be anyone but yourself. Like, and like, to be honest with you, George, like, for me, it's kind of sad how much kind of praise I've gotten off that show for just being myself and being honest. Like, it says a lot about the world we live in, that for a human being to show their true colors, everyone's gone, well, fair play to you. Like, and I'm like, why? What? Like, I'm not gifted or talented. I'm not doing it. I'm just being who I am. And And that's why I know the hardest thing in life is to be yourself, because we're in a world where it's all about perfection. I'm like, obviously driven by social media, driven by appearances, driven by likes on photos and all this kind of rubbish. Like, and at the end of the day, like, if you're not yourself, like, you have to deal with your own mind. Like, and if you can put on this persona from 9 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night, it's very tiring. Like, I'm sure if you go home then and look in the mirror going, I was fake there. That's not who I am. And you have to tell yourself that when you're lying in bed trying to sleep and trying to meditate. But at the end of the day, you're not being yourself. And until you accept who you are, and look in the mirror and go, this is who I am. Yes, not everyone's going to like me, and that's okay. But as long as I'm true to myself, things will be a bit easier. And that's what I've learned. And again, I've kind of always been myself. But the more I get into this world of kind of fame, is like, celebrity is a word I hate, because like, what makes anyone a celebrity? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, the best person at painting nails or the best person at building a house, like, are really good at that. It's just because what I do draws attention, which is kind of comedy and sketches and that. So I'm not really sure. Like, it's like my wife would say, oh my God, Rory, do you know who that is? Who? It's the number one makeup artist in the world. And I'm like, and? It's like me saying, Emma, do you know who that is? No, it's like the best golfer in the world. Like, do you know, whatever. She's like, I don't care about golf. Do you know? And it's all perspective. Like, so yeah. It doesn't really make sense to me. So that's why, like, again, going back to the point of Robbie Keane's not saying now, is people, they're just themselves. They're just really good at what they do, and it brings a bit of attention to it. So, like, yeah, being yourself is so hard, but I think it's where you find true happiness, genuinely. Yeah. That's what I preach a lot to school kids, is don't go around and try to be this big macho man, or try to be this girl that, you know, is above everyone and everyone loves her and she's so pretty. She could be miserable when she goes home and looks in the mirror. She could say, I hate myself. But in the schoolyard, everyone thinks she's the queen and everyone loves her and she's the most followed on Instagram. But like, she mightn't be happy. But the girl going down the road that's not even on social media and doesn't care, she's probably absolutely living the dream. Like, and that's what people need to understand, that you have to just be yourself, like, you know.
And it's so true. And when you started speaking about your mental health, did you feel very vulnerable doing that, or did you get strength in the fact that you were helping other people?
Yeah, so like that interview, like the specific interview, the real rough interview I had in Hell Week, when I come back to the dorm, like, I was a broken man. Like, and I, like, it's funny, in the dorm, I was the kind of the rallying man. I was, come on, we get to do it now. And then crying, and like a mounted him that text me being like, oh my God, like in the room, you were so strong. But then in the camera, you were so vulnerable, and like, you're like a different person. But I came back after that interview and I sat there, and I remember Niamh Cullen was like, yeah, okay. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm grand. I just had a moment. And Ryan Andrews, I didn't notice, but he was looking over at me, and apparently he had the interview, the real tough one, about his dad. And he said to me that he looked at me going, Jesus, if Rory's able to show vulnerability, like, and look like he's the big strong fella in the gang, and geez, so can I. And for me, that's what I took out of Hell Week. Jeez, like, if it takes me to cry on TV, I've no bother doing it. If it makes other men, like, the bottom line is not taking your life. Like, that is straight to cutthroat stuff. I'm not going to beat around the bush about getting, the bottom line is not taking your life. And if it means like me kind of like, yeah, getting slags off my mates going, oh, do you have your t-shirts with you tonight, Rory? Like, when we had a point with them recently, now, that I can take all that. That's fine. But to know that other men and can look at me going, well, if Rory is able to show a human side to him, I need to as well. And like, again, the amount of messages I've gotten online is mind blown since the show. And even walking down my local street, people that would never say boo to me, Rory stories are all about the show, and the builders going, yeah, Rory, you boy, out the window and all. Like, these kind of probably taught themselves macho man ego, but because, geez, you know, I feel a bit like Rory myself. I might ring my local doctor, I might talk to my girlfriend about my mental health, and that's what I'm all about. And that's why pre-Hell Week, I've always been driving mental health in the country. And the fact that I got to do it on probably the most popular TV show the country's had in years, and to just be myself. I didn't have a script. I didn't have to impress anyone. I didn't have to worry about lines. I just went there and just said things that came into my head and just rolled with it, you know.
My husband, Jamie, he's in this men's circle and they meet up every Wednesday. And it was actually, I think, such a lifesaver for him during COVID because, you know, when the restrictions would allow, they were able to sit around outside, sit around a fire and just talk to each other, and they'd have different themes each week. And last night they got a speaker in, and he was speaking about his journey with mental health. And Jamie asked him a question, and I'd love to ask you this. You know, you're very in tune with yourself now, and you've gone on this kind of journey with your mental health. Do you know what to look out for? Like, can you see the cloud coming?
Yeah, and listen, it's funny you say that, and this is straight up honesty. Like, I'm not lying when I say this. I literally only went to my local doctor yesterday again about my well-being, like, because, listen, I'm 99% sure I'm ADHD. Like, I just haven't been diagnosed, but I know I am. I think my wife, everyone knows I am, but I haven't officially. And there could be potential bipolar there as well, because I go extremely high to extremely low in the space of hours. Like, and listen, it's difficult. Like the other day, usually I go train and exercise. For me, if I don't have my exercise, I can't function properly. And I usually go at 6 o'clock on a Monday morning, and I didn't go last Monday morning because I was on the Claire Byrne show Monday night, and I wanted to work out later on the day just to have my head in a good place. And that morning I was okay and I was in good enough form, and then bang, I had to leave the house. Like, I just got so flustered and so negative in my head, and my wife was like, what the hell is wrong with you? And I said to her, like, I need to go talk to the doctor. Like, I rang the doctor straight away, and now typical Ireland, like, I didn't get an appointment till Thursday, which was yesterday. And it was grand though. I was chatting, because it wasn't like a man going to a doctor like in tears, being like, you know, so anxious, saying I suffer from a mental health, because I'm over that. I know I suffer from mental health. I accepted that back in 2013. I'm really good at talking about it. But for my sake, for the sake of my wife and my children, I want to get officially diagnosed what's wrong with me, because I know I have plenty going on there, whether it be the bipolar, ADHD. And so I'm hopefully going to be like, the waiting list, George, is a joke. I'm going to be real straight. Like, the fella I want to see, I'm told it's at least 3 months till you can see him, because there's no alternative. So I'm mentally strong. Like, regarding taking my life, that's gone out of my head now. I accepted that when I asked for help, like, that I know how my head works. The demons come and they tell me I'm no good, but I ignore them now and I move on. But for people who mightn't be, have built up the resilience I have, imagine you saying, oh, you have to wait 3 months. That's 3 months of them, again, fighting the demons. And who knows how many people we've lost, you know, to suicide during them 3 months. So, like, it's like, we need to, like, I know we're all saying it, but we need to start concentrating on well-being in the country and mental health. We have to, like, because my son is already getting assessed for potential ADHD. He's very like me. He's wired. He's up and down. And I want to be the leader for him. Like, because when I was his age, there was nothing. I was just told to get out of my class and face the wall. Rory, go off to that wall and face it, because I couldn't spell. I'm dyslexic and I was facing the wall. And I'm 34 years of age now and successful at what I do, but I still have so much self-doubt. And I really do believe it comes from them early years. So I want to go and get diagnosed to be able to help my son and say, listen, this is what we do. And even for myself, when that cloud is coming, I have other ways of coping. For me, it's exercise. But Georgie, what if I break my leg, touch wood, and I can't run? What do I do then? Like, my mind is all over. So I have to have other tools to go and say, right, well, meditation works for me. Ringing my friend works for me, whatever. Like, because it's all about being here tomorrow. Whatever it takes to be here tomorrow, you do it. So that's kind of literally only recently what I'm doing. So just, again, for me going on stage and talking about my well-being, I want to be fully in control of what I have. Like, so I know I have something wrong with me. I just don't know yet. I will, hopefully, in a couple of months. And then I can help people that also have that and say, well, this is what works for me. And it's just, again, about highs and lows. I am the ultimate high and low. You know what I mean? When I'm high, I'd move mountains. And when I'm low, I'd be afraid of a mouse. Like, do you know that kind of way? It's weird. It's hard to explain. Like, but watching myself in Hell Week proved that, you know, 1 minute I'm just this absolute machine, and the next minute I just sitting there, I want to go home, like, I don't want to be here. Like, so it's just my life, really, to be honest with you. And I just kind of, yeah, I go with it as best I can. And, you know, I just keep going pretty much. Like,
I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Rory, and I just wanted to thank Vichy for supporting this episode of The Good Glow. I wanted to tell you all about their new hero product, Mineral 89 Probiotic Serum. Recently, through working with Vichy and speaking to their skincare experts, I learned that stress can actually affect our skin and how it looks. Over the past few years, I've learned about the importance of de-stressing. I'm sure something that Rory certainly had to do after his stint on Hell Week. So what can we do for our skin? Well, Vichy's new Mineral 89 probiotic serum targets acutely stressed skin and supports the repair of skin barrier damage. Mineral 89 probiotics is proven to visibly improve dullness, elasticity, stress lines, and overall radiance for the recharge of stressed skin needs. It's dermatologist tested, hypoallergenic, and fragrance free. It can be used every morning and night after cleansing your skin before your moisturizer. For a 20% Mars Pharmacy discount on Mineral 89 Skin Booster and Mineral 89 Probiotic Fraction Serum, use code GOODGLOW20 online only at mars.ie until November 30th.
Wow. And those, the cloud, the bad days, what happens to you on those days? Are you the type of person that you just want to stay in bed or hide
I go into myself, like, you know, and I generally try to delete my social media because I just don't need any unnecessary crap, because, like, at the end of the day, like, we all think that first, oh my God, why doesn't that person like me? What did I do wrong to them? And that's just not us with social media following. It could be in the local shop and you wave at your friend and she doesn't wave back because she might have seen, and you go home going, she didn't wave at me. Oh my God, like, what did I do wrong to her? And that is our mind. So what we all have, and this is what me, actually myself and Ray Goggins are doing shows on, is about these negative thoughts. It's about, is a fact of fiction. And a lot of the time it's fiction. Like, it's like, well, did she go up and say she doesn't like you? No, well, then it's you and your negative thoughts. And if you sit there with your negative thoughts and you scroll social media and you read something negative and you sit there and you let it go into you and you sit there and all of a sudden you believe it and, like, your energy's gone. You just want to go to bed with a box of Pringles and cry, like, do you know what I mean? And that's literally the way it is. So you have to just take a moment, take a deep breath. Do I know it's just fact or fiction? Well, I don't know it's a fact. Well, then get it out of your mind as soon as you can. So that's something I am working on. And Ray Goggins gave me that tip, actually. And it's really good. It's just fact or fiction. So when you have a self-doubt about not being good enough or someone not liking you, let it come in. Yeah. Is it true? No. Why? Because, well, I only think, well, then it's not true. Get it out of your head. And that's kind of how I manage it. Like, so, but self-doubt is always there, like, you know, and during them clouds you're on about, the self-doubt is rampant. Like, I'd have no confidence to make a sketch. I have no confidence to do anything like that. I feel like, no, I can't do anything, and I wouldn't be able to dare do anything out of my comfort zone. Like, you know, and but then it passes, and then I feel like I'm bulletproof again. And it's just a yo-yo. It's constantly up and down, and that's what we say to people. When you are feeling really good and the sun is shining on you, really enjoy them days, like, really breathe in fresh air, just enjoy life. And then, because you often say, why was I feeling low there the other day? What, like, Jesus Christ, I'm still in the same financial position, I'm still in the same relationship, nothing has changed, it's all in my head, like, and it's up, down, and then when you are going through the negative days, remember that this will pass, this is going to pass here, and I know it's difficult, you feel it's always going to be there, but then it does pass and you're back again. And again, that's just my experience. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatric nurse. I'm not preaching about this. It's just generally my head and my experience. And that's what I share with others that may or may not relate to me, you know?
Oh, it's really interesting what you said there. It's something that I picked up on, that you said that you struggle with your self-doubt. So for lots of us, maybe we would just say, I'm really anxious. I'm just an anxious person. But what is actually the cause of that anxiety? Is it self-doubt? Is it, you know, a lack of whatever it may be? So it's really interesting that you can kind of almost pinpoint where your struggle is. Did it take you long to kind of find out that it was self-doubt that gets you?
Yeah, well, one thing brutal honesty is, you have to start with brutal honesty with yourself. Like, if you can call other people, but we can't call ourselves. Like, it's no different than in a gym, if you're doing a circuit, like, and it's meant to be 20 reps and you're doing 15.
I do that all the time.
And like, you think you're ahead of the group, and someone who's bursting their ass is going, there's no way did she do 15 burpees there. And like at the end of the day, like, what are you proving? Like, you're going home to have a shower, and like yeah, you know, you're not getting a medal here. It's you against you, like, you know, and that's what I mean. It's like, like, you have to be honest with yourself. Like, you know, you can call all the people you want, but we all have to go to sleep with our own inner thoughts. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a fact. We all have to go to bed and lie there, and it's just you v you. Like, and if you're not honest with that person in your head, what's the point in being fake or being non yourself to other people around you from 8 to 8 every day? Like, Denzel Washington came up with a really good one. It's like, if you can tame the devil within, the devil outside can do no harm. So if you're in control of your own mindset and your own negativity, the outside world can come up and say, Georgie, I think you are a B-I-T-C-H, I never liked you. Or Rory, I think you're the most unfunniest arsehole I ever met. That's grand. That's your opinion. It's not fact. It's just your opinion. You know what I mean? On you, yeah, that's, yeah, I know you don't like me now. You said it to my face, which people generally don't, as you know, it's behind a phone or a keyboard. And that's grand. It is what it is. But isn't it great we're talking about this? Like, do you know what I mean? This is the main, like, the conversation we're having now. And like your husband, like, imagine you said 20 years ago, come on, lads, we'll get an old campfire going. What's wrong with him? Like, when I was in school, like, if a lad wore a pink t-shirt, he was gay. Looking back, and I feel so sorry for lads I was in school that were gay and in a closet for so long. Imagine mental health issues there, coming home and looking in the mirror going, I fancy boys and not girls, and, like, I can't tell my friends. And you're probably cutting back then because the bullying would just go extreme. And thankfully, from what I hear, you know, in school now, it's very, you know, sexuality is very accepted and there's no big deal if one of the lads is gay or one of the girls is lesbian. And isn't that great? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, growing up, like, I definitely, like, was attracted to the opposite sex. I sure was. But, like, I know I would have had friends that weren't. And imagine how miserable them days would have been for them. Like, genuinely, imagine waking up, like, oh, you know, I fancy her, and you don't, like, do you know what I mean? You fancy one of your mates or one of, like, and I feel that we're the middle generation, like, so the old school is there, like, my parents, and they are raw, and they have their opinion, but for leaders of our country and all, we have to break down the boundaries for our kids coming through. We can't have them dealing with all this negativity that we all did, whether you're feeling stupid in school, whether you're questioning sexuality, whatever it may be in your own little mind, let them say it's acceptable to talk about that. Because I didn't know what mental health was when I was in school. I didn't know what depression, anxiety, none of us knew what it was. We just thought, you're in bad form, get over yourself, you need to kick up the arse and get on with it. Like, and again, we have to show the leadership for our children that they understand that, you know, it is okay. Like, you know, and if you're struggling in school, doesn't mean you're not going to be successful. If you don't get 600 points, doesn't mean you're not going to be successful. And I preached that. I spent most of the lockdown speaking to 3 schools a day, from 10 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock and 2, anywhere from Galway, Donegal, Dublin. And the same message, that there's 5 or 6 in the classroom that think you're stupid right now because of the education system, but you're not. Trust me. He says, I'm dyslexic. I didn't even do a Leaving Cert and I had 3 best-selling books. So don't tell me, do you know what I mean? Don't tell me that you're stupid. Like, do you know what I mean? And it's important, because the first thing I say to students when I talk is, I want your full attention because I wish I heard this when I was 16. That's the first thing I say to them. Then you kind of get their attention. And the feedback is always unreal, because it's just refreshing to hear someone that hasn't got a proper Leaving Cert, hasn't got a degree, hasn't got diplomas coming out of their arse, none of that. Like, I can't even spell, like, but that's okay. I made a good career for myself. And it's important, because what happens is drink, drugs, gambling all comes into it then, because why? They're trying to silence that voice in their head. That's why they all go mad once at the beginning. I was part of that. Working a job I hated from Monday to Friday, drink, go to house parties, do drugs, whatever you do, and then be so depressed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then feel good Thursday, and then on again Friday. And this is the vicious circle. Like,
can I just get this thing? I never normally bring this notebook to my podcast, because I'm training to be a health coach. But I brought it today. And just when you're saying that, we did something the other day. This is it, exactly what you're talking about. So it's like a triangle, right? It starts here. So it's adverse childhood experience. So that's the, you know, feeling excluded, feeling stupid, whatever may be going on at home. Then you go on to social and emotional impairment. Then it goes on to an adoption of health risk behaviors. And then it goes on to disease, disability, social problems, early death. And that's exactly what you're saying. And I know you know, you were saying you don't need a degree in anything. You've figured all that out yourself.
It's only, I'm telling you, it's only in 20 years time we will be like, our kids be like, they don't know what in school. They expected 30 students to learn the same thing from 9 to 3 every day. Yeah, yeah. And like, really? And what happens if you didn't? Oh, they just kicked you out of class. What? They made you stand there. Like, we have this hall in my old primary school where all the lunatic hall, we called it, like, where all the lads were out. And the sad and very true story about that is, say if there's 10 of us, one or two are in jail, one or two are in drugs, one or two are alcoholics, you know, one or two turned out okay. I was one of them, but a lot of them, and I know they're good lads, ended up going down the wrong road because why? They felt that they were never going to have a good job, and drug dealing is a lot easier to make money. You know, shoving coke up your nose every weekend makes you feel better for a few hours, and then, you know, you hit the low side. And that's what I try to say. It's like, do you know what sickens me, right? Is every single Leaving Cert results day, RTE and TV3 and all these people show, look at John and Mary who got 600 points and look at their proud parents, and here's Rory or Georgia Home that worked so hard for 300 points and their parents gone, if you had studied harder, you could have been them. And that straight away dents their confidence. And what happens then? Again, it goes on to drink drugs and then self-harm. So that's why I have such a passion. I don't want young people to feel like I did in school. I'm like, listen, and that's why I especially wrote my first book. It was so hard, and the devil on the shoulder was there every day going, what are you doing writing a book here, pal? Would you get a grip of that? But I ignored it and I wrote the book, and because I wanted to come into the youth reaches and LCAs, but like, look what I done. And I am in no way talented as half you people here, but just please apply yourself to whatever you want to do in life and work really hard, and you do whatever you want to do. So, yeah, like the Leaving Cert and all that, like how much longer is it going to go on? Like, how are they going to treat 100 students based on sitting there, like the likes of ADHD? How are they meant to sit down and write for 3 hours about English or waffle about English or do maths? How are they meant to do it? They're not. It's imprisoning people. School is imprisoning some people. Like, it genuinely is. If you look at a football team, there's certain people that are really good at kicking the ball in the goal. There's some people who are really good at saving the ball. There's some people really good at tackling. There's some people that are really good at running. They're all uniquely, differently talented. What makes a team? In school, we're all meant to be the same player, if you know what I mean. We're all meant to expect to do the same thing. Listen to a teacher preaching the same thing. We're all meant to be at the same level. And if you're not, you fall back, you get kicked out of class, you get suspended, you get expelled, you go on drugs, you think about suicide. Like,
my God.
Like, it's genuine.
When you put it like that, it's actually like astounding to think about.
Yeah, like it'll blow your mind, like, you know. And like, I enjoy the comedy and I enjoy making sketches, but this is my baby. Like, this is what, like, if I do anything with my life, it's banging down that door. So when I do eventually move on to wherever the hell we're going to go after this world, God knows, not back to Hell Week anyway. But I want it to have made enough noise that, like, our kids, when they're in secondary school, that they go into secondary school and they leave secondary school knowing more about who they are and what they're meant to do in this world. You know, and I battle with my negative thoughts every day because of in school being told, you're not good enough, you'll never amount to anything. Like, and when you're 11 and 12, it's hard to psychologically move that voice out of your head. You have to work on it with counsellors to try and dig deep in, which Hell Week did. Hell Week went straight into that soul and found that young 9-year-old that doesn't feel he's good enough, even though to the country you're looking at Rory's stories with, like, geez, he's a million followers and he's all this and all that, but like, I was just looking at a 9-year-old going, like, I was kicked out of class again here, I'm not good enough, you know. And that's like, yeah, so hopefully even just that alone makes people realize that we all have that self-doubt, and it's kind of figuring that, you know, you are better than you think you are. You just have to ignore that voice in your head. I suppose fulfill your destiny is just ignoring that voice and plowing on. Like,
oh wow, I think it's really important what you said today, that this week you went to the doctor because everyone looking at you this week would think that you have it all, you know. Yeah. and how important, and I think it's just incredible that you've said that today on this podcast, that this week when everyone is giving you a pat on the back, everyone wants to interview, everyone wants to hang out with you, everyone wants to hear your story, you've said, I went to the doctor this week.
Yeah, yeah. And like, it's a true story. I just felt that between watching myself back on the show and realize my highs and lows and living with myself and my wife living with me, I just... it wasn't like the ultimate going, I asked for help because I'm good at that, but it was the ultimate going and finally figuring out what the hell issue I have. And it was a cool conversation with the doctor. He was saying about Hell Week that he loved and his wife loved it. And I was like, yeah, well, like, you know, I'm not here. I said, I'm sure, doctor, you've had many a man here, a broken man crying to you. I'm past all that. I have no emotion here telling you this. I'm good at my mental health now, but I just want to speak to a very trained psychologist or to figure out ADHD, bipolar, whatever it may be. I want to know, and I want ways to deal with it. Like, do you know what I mean? Just to make me a stronger person going forward. Like, and for helping people out with their mental health, I have to make sure I'm in full control of mine. Like, do you know what I mean? So that's why I went there this week. Yeah.
And that'll be your next chapter, whatever happens, you know, on that journey that you're about to go on, that will be your next chapter. And I'm blown away by the podcast today. I think you've helped me so much, like just in the things that you're saying. I think I really suffer with a lot of self-doubt, and I feel like I'm wasting my life with self-doubt a little bit. And I'm like, I need to go back to counseling. I need to, you know, really get to the bottom of this and allow myself to be happy and live my life that I fought so hard for during, you know, cancer and all that. Like, what am I worrying about all the time? But we all go through it, don't we?
Yeah, but just as long as people know that we're all in the same boat, like we all experience that. And I guarantee you, some of the most successful people in the world will look in the mirror and say, yeah, I still think that I'm a fraud, or I'm not good enough, or that I'm an imposter. Like, you know, where you're not, you just, that's the voice in the head. And that's why we're doing, myself and Ray Goggins are doing these shows on resilience, like, because we feel, me and Ray got on, we genuinely feel we are the men to start banging this home, like, and, you know, we are what you see. And me and Ray are just going to be doing these events, saying what I said to you today, that please don't let that inner voice stop you from fulfilling your potential. Like, and I know you had Jerry Hussey on the podcast, and I met Jerry over in his home a few months ago, and we had a mind-blowing conversation. Yes. You know, you just connect with someone and it's like, Jerry, like, Jesus Christ. And I haven't unfortunately worked much with Jerry because he's busy and I'm busy with kids now, but he's a serious man, and he wants people to just unleash, open that lock and let all your spirit flow out of you, like, and connect with the universe and all that stuff, like, you know, that Jerry's so good at talking about. And it's true though, like, it's like you have to just say, like, yeah, I'm going to acknowledge your dear voice, and I'm going to let you, it's like someone down the back of the class just annoying you, but you're not going to dictate, you know, what I'm going to do. And Mark O'Neill made a great point in Hell Week in the helicopter, saying the fear was there, but I'm not going to stop doing what I do. And that's, again, what people need to understand is, whether, you know, getting out of bed is difficult, or applying for that job, or if you feel there's a position in your job that you know you're good enough, but the self-doubt tells you, no, you're not good enough. Get back to that normal job where you can see yourself being the team leader, the manager, the director of this company. If you can see it in your eyes, you can hold it in your hands. Like, I'm telling people that I had a dream at Rory Stories, and it completely manifested into my life. Like, I remember driving up, you know, to gigs in my old deceased, God love her, granny's red polo, and parking it like down the road because I was too embarrassed to go in because people are paying to see me, and I'm driving this car because I had no money. And now there's a brand new big black Jeep out there that I get for nothing. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, because I believed in myself and I went for it, and I took all the punches and all that comes with it. But once you don't quit, you're not a failure. People have to understand that. If you die, if people are at your wake and you spend 80 years trying to cure baldness, for instance, like, right, yeah, or cancer, right, let's just kind of meet each other here, and you still died in your depth and going, I will do it, you are not a quitter, you're not a failure, like, you just haven't got there yet. So people need to understand that it might take a day, a week, or it might take you 5 years, but when you start to get to the milestones, I call it like a bag of jelly. So imagine your guardian angel has a bag of jelly saying, if you want this full bag of jellies, you have to work hard. And someday they might give you one jelly, and then you might get jelly for 3 days, and you start saying, I don't want any more jellies, but then you do. And then you might get three because you didn't quit. Then all of a sudden you have half the bag, and you start to see the light, and you start to see, I am good at this. Jesus, I can do this. And luck favors the brave and all that kind of stuff. But it is true. And Like, that's what I believe anyway, that every one of us, like, have the potential, but fear stops us. Like, it's not failure. You know that as well. It's not failure. Like, once you start, you're not going to fail. Once you give yourself a plan A and scribble out plan B, because if plan A gets hard, you're going to fall back to plan B. That's the way it is. So when I started out my career, I didn't even put plan B in the paper. I said, plan B is death. That's what plan B is. And plan A is going to happen. Like, and that's literally the way I roll. Like, it's like, no. I'm going to do it. It's like Hell Week. Like, I crawl around that room. I was dying. Like, you know, I literally, I can't describe how hard that crawl was. I was beyond exhausted mentally and physically, but I allowed myself go to that place in Hell Week. I allowed myself be seen. My 9-year-old self was seen to the nation. Like, and yeah, it was not nice watching it back, but I'm so happy I let myself go that far mentally and physically, because when I woke up in the recovery room, like, in a shed, basically, was on a blow-up mattress. I remember looking in the mirror, which I was terrified. I lost like 7 kilos in the 3 days there. And I remember looking in the mirror being like, no regrets. Like, you emptied it. So don't go home now and have food and have a shower and think you're a great man. I have nothing left in the tank. And it's a lovely feeling knowing when you've kind of done everything you can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can sleep at night. So once people reach that with their life and their career and whatever their dreams are, if you know you gave it everything, it's a lovely feeling. Like, you know, no regrets, like, basically, like, you know.
Oh, you've transformed my day. I was feeling a little bit down in the dumps this morning, and I am literally going to be punching the air walking out of here today. Thank you so much for everything that you do and for the pep talk that you've given me. And I know people listening to this podcast today will have a bit more self-belief. And that's great, isn't it? So that's what your show in Vicar Street. It's probably, I'm putting this podcast out next week. So hopefully tickets will still be on sale. But yourself and Ray, you're doing a little tour.
Yeah, we're doing a tour in Vicar Street, in Limerick and in Galway, with the potential of a couple of extra dates, put it that way, depending on how things go. So yeah, there might be a couple of extra dates there if people are interested. But yeah, super excited about it. And like I'm going to be sitting in Vicar Street with Ray Goggins talking about life. Like, if that's not law of attraction, I don't know what. I was actually looking at the photo myself the other night going, oh my God, like, what the hell? I remember watching Hell Week series 1 and 2, and Ray Goggins is like the ultimate legend, and I'm going to be on stage. That's how much he holds in high regard, and it's mind blowing. But like I said, like, take me as an example, that if you just ignore failure and work hard, it will happen for you. There's so much proof out there. Just go on the YouTube or go on the internet, Google people, and they all him off the same sheet. Ignore failure, work hard, and be honest with yourself, and that's the name of the game. It will happen for you. Like,
amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, pleasure. No bother. Yeah.
Well, what an episode that was. I've actually listened to that episode twice this week, and I feel the exact same way each time I listen to it, which is this sense of self-belief, positivity, like a feeling of wanting to take on the world. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And if you enjoyed it, please share it with somebody else who you think might get something from it. I think Rory said some really important stuff today when he was talking about that breakdown he had, and, you know, that interview followed of when he said, you know, he battled with demons and he felt like he was never good enough. It reminded me of a podcast I listened to recently. My friend Claire Solon sent it to me. And it's a podcast with Brené Brown and Oprah. And in it, Brené says that every breakdown is a spiritual awakening. And I've thought of the many breakdowns that I've had over the last couple of years, how those rock bottom moments are actually such opportunities for growth and learning and new beginnings. And, you know, when he said he reached that rock bottom moment and he got up the next day and felt like he could take on the world, I think there's a lesson in that for all of us. That's the rising. Something else that really hit home with me from Rory's podcast was when he was speaking about, you know, being your true self and how that's what we're craving these days, is like real people, real stories, real emotions. And also in that podcast with Brené and Oprah, Brené says the more cynical people are, the less we want to show our true selves, because it is hard to be ridiculed all the time. We protect ourselves from the world by armoring, and that armor keeps us from accessing the things that we are most desperate for, which is, you know, stepping into who we really are, no matter what other people think. And I think I'm really grateful to Rory and, you know, listening to that podcast this week, it's all kind of clicking with me. So let's all try to be our true selves and care a little bit less about what other people think about us. It's worked out pretty well for Rory. And I'm so grateful to him for coming on my podcast. So thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Vichy. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. It really goes a long way. Our show at the National Concert Hall is 100% taking place on the 2nd of November. It starts at 8 o'clock. So if you have tickets, please check your inbox for an email from the National Concert Hall. You should have been issued new tickets this week, and I'll chat to you next week.